Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're digging into something really unique, maybe one of the most surprising pictures of God you'll find anywhere in the Bible.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Imagine finding an attribute, a specific characteristic of God that's only mentioned once, just one time.
And it's tucked away in a book most people, let's be honest, probably haven't spent a lot of time in, Zephaniah.
Right. We usually think of God as, you know, the creator, all-powerful, the judge, majesty, glory. No. That's the standard view.
But the material we looked at this week, it zeroes in on this one verse that shows this flash of, well, profound emotion. It's quite something.
That's really our mission today, isn't it? To unpack this verse.
Exactly. We're talking Zephaniah chapter 3, verse 17. Let me read it quickly from the ESV. The Lord your God is in your midst, a mighty one who will save. He will rejoice over you with gladness. He will quiet you by his love. He will exult over you with loud singing.
Loud singing. I mean, just stop there for a second. The voice that spoke creation into being directed towards singing over an individual with joy. It sort of forces you to reconcile the immense power with this deeply personal act.
It really does. And the big question that jumps out is why? Why here in Zephaniah, of all places? This book is mostly known for its warnings, right? Judgment.
Precisely. You can't understand the song without understanding the setting. The context is key.
So let's set that scene. Zephaniah is prophesying in Judah, the southern kingdom.
Mm-hmm. During the reign of King Josiah. And Josiah, historically, he was one of the good kings. He tried to bring reform, took down false altars, tried to get people back on track.
But the people themselves, our readings suggest they were, well, generations deep in just abandoning their covenant with God. Idolatry, sin, It was pretty widespread.
Yeah, despite Josiah's best efforts, the culture was leaning heavily the wrong way.
So God uses Zephaniah to deliver this message, and it's tough. It's a message of judgment.
It really is. He talks about mass destruction, exile for the survivors. I mean, it's a bleak forecast. Consequences are definitely coming.
Okay, but right in the middle of all that heaviness, this pivot, God drops this single verse, Zephaniah 3:17, a verse brimming with personal hope.
And the source material really emphasizes the purpose of this verse. It wasn't just nice words. It was meant to be something they held on to, recited, remembered while they were in exile.
Okay. So when they're living out the consequences in a foreign land, they needed this specific reminder, God still delights in you.
Exactly. It's saying even when you're facing the music for your choices, the relationship itself isn't totally severed. It pushes back hard against the idea of God being just distant and severe.
Which is, I guess, the perfect setup for diving into what this verse actually tells us about God. The material breaks it down into six truths, six attributes, really, that explain what's happening when God sings.
Yeah, six P attributes, as the source calls them. Let's start with the first pair, presence and power. They tackle the basics. Is God near and is he able?
Okay, first one, God is present. The verse says, is in your midst.
Right. And the argument in our reading is that even when the people had turned their backs on God, even when they were facing judgment, he hadn't turned his back on them.
I really liked the analogy they used here. It makes so much sense. The one about parental punishment.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. It really helps distinguish discipline from neglect, doesn't it?
It does. Like, if your kid messes up, you don't just lock them in their room and, you know, leave town for the weekend.
Right. That would be abandonment neglect. Real discipline means you stay. You're present during the consequence because you're still invested.
So God is saying, even when you're dealing with the fallout of your choices, I'm still here, I'm still at home with you. He doesn't walk out.
And that presence isn't just passive waiting. That leads to the second truth. He is powerful. The verse calls him a mighty one who will save.
A mighty one. So he's saving a remnant, right? Despite all their corruption and pride, they kind of deserve destruction, but he preserves some. What's the saving from, though?
Well, in the immediate context, it was saving them from being completely wiped out. But the source material connects this powerfully to the New Testament idea of salvation.
Okay, how so?
It pointed towards 2 Corinthians 5.21. You know the one.
Yeah.
God made him who had no sin to be sin for us, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God.
Right. So the power isn't just like physical rescue power, it's the power to deal with the sin itself, to lift the shame.
It's a power to save you. Even when you're stuck in the middle of the consequences, if you feel like you don't deserve good things or healing or favor because of your past, this verse says God is mighty enough to save you even then.
That's a huge comfort. And it flows really nicely into the next theme, doesn't it? Moving from power into, well, the more emotional side, pleasure and peace.
Yeah. the third truth, and this one might be the most surprising for many people. God takes pleasure in you. The verse says, he will rejoice over you with gladness.
We're always told we should rejoice in God, right? Like Philippians 4.4, rejoice in the Lord always. So the implication here, which the reading really highlights, is that God isn't asking us to do something he won't do himself. He rejoices too.
And not just occasionally. He continuously rejoices. Think about that. If we're called to find joy even when things are tough, God, who doesn't change, is always rejoicing over his people.
Wow. That just completely flips the script on seeing him as like a grumpy old man waiting to catch you messing up.
It really does. He's actively rejoicing over you, specifically with gladness. It's happening right now, not just some future reward.
And that act of pleasure, that gladness, leads right into the fourth truth. God is peace. It says he will quiet you by his love.
This is set against the internal noise, right? The noise of guilt, shame, self-condemnation, what the source calls the prison of sinful actions.
That prison of noise, that's a potent image. If you've ever been caught in that cycle, it feels loud, like constant shouting in your head.
Yeah, but God's response isn't to shout louder. He quiets you with his love.
And the reading made a really interesting point here. Love, true love, isn't loud in that condemning way.
Exactly. Love whispers. It's intimate. The analogy used was about leaning in to hear soft words of affection, like a spouse positioning themselves to catch those quiet words.
So if the world is screaming at you, full of judgment and distraction, you need to intentionally lean into God's quiet love to actually hear it.
Mm-hmm. You have to create that space, tune out the noise, and that quiet preparation, that intimacy, it sets the stage perfectly for the climax of the verse, theme three. Performance and personal choice.
Right. The fifth truth, this is the one everyone remembers, God performs with singing. He will exult over you with loud singing. So first, he quiets us with love.
And then right after that quiet moment, the material says, he basically cranks it up. He sings at the top of his lungs.
It's such a contrast. Quiet love, then this loud, exultant song.
It's like turning up your absolute favorite song on the radio, full blast.
Yeah.
Only this song is about you, and the performer is the creator of everything.
The reading had that slightly awkward but memorable comparison. The restaurant staff singing happy birthday.
Oh, yeah. While you're wearing the silly hat, wishing the ground would swallow you up.
Totally. That feeling of being the center of attention may be a bit embarrassed.
But why use that image? I think the point was that God's joyful declaration over you is so powerful, so unavoidable, it kind of overwhelms any self-consciousness or shame you might feel. It's a public celebratory performance, and you're the focus.
That focus makes it so intimate, though. I mean, think about it. When was the last time someone actually sang a song over you, like performed it just for you?
It's rare, isn't it? The source pointed out, for most adults, the last time was probably as a totally dependent child, with a parent or caregiver.
Yeah, the author mentioned only their mother ever singing over them, singing Hush, Little Baby. It connects this huge divine act back to that really foundational, unconditional love.
So you have the mighty one, the powerful God, singing what amounts to a lullaby of grace over you, a song loud enough to silence all the world's noise. It's just astounding.
Astounding power used with incredible focus, which brings us right to the final truth, the condition that unlocks all of this, found right at the start of the verse.
Yes. The sixth point, the personal requirement. It says, the Lord your God.
Ah, that's the hinge, isn't it? All these amazing things, presence, power, pleasure, peace, the singing performance, they're all predicated on this relationship. He has to be your God.
Exactly. The original audience was Israel. They had chosen God, even though they were messing up badly at the time.
So the application for us today, as the reading suggested, is for anyone in that relationship with him, maybe especially if you're feeling weighed down by past mistakes or current struggles.
Right. Disobedience definitely has consequences. The Bible is clear on that. But for those who are his, who have chosen him, God offers this incredible mercy and grace even within those consequences.
That personal commitment that he is my God is what opens your ears to hear that song he's singing over you.
It's the connection point. You have to affirm that choice to fully receive this message of hope hidden in Zephaniah.
Okay, so let's try and pull this all together. From this one verse, Zephaniah 3.17, we've unpacked these five incredible P attributes. God's constant presence, his saving power, his deep pleasure in us, his ability to bring peace, and finally, his amazing performance, that loud singing.
It's a remarkably complete picture, really, of how the Almighty engages with his people, especially when they feel they least deserve it.
And that leaves us with a final thought, something for you to maybe chew on. Consider this. God is the mighty one, the creator, infinite majesty, right? Hmm. Yet the only place in the entire Bible where it explicitly says he uses his voice to sing. It's not about creation. It's not about cosmic power. It's in this incredibly intimate moment, rejoicing over one person, often a person who is struggling, facing consequences, feeling shame.
So what does that tell you about God's priorities?
Yeah.
That the same power that holds the universe together is focused into this personal, emotional, joyful song.
Yeah.
Just for you.
That paradox, immense power used for intimate love, that's something worth thinking about long after this deep dive ends.
Absolutely. A truth to carry with you.
We'll see you next time for the next deep dive.